It's your buddy cop comedy.
I mean, yeah, this could actually be even more fun if it is the rogue and the paladin. I was going to do a little like B&E reconnaissance, but like you're here, huh?
I'll go talk to the shopkeeper. Okay, you talk to the shopkeeper.
Right, yeah.
I sneak into the storeroom and see right. What he has back there for ritual components.
Live from the Mundangerous Crow's Nest in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 287 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about reconnaissance. But first, the party dishes out a little hellish rebuke in the Gates of Morning campaign. And later, Radar sees it all and misses nothing in the Character Creation Forge. Hey, yo, we've been at this for 6 years, and we thought, I don't know, maybe you deserve a little extra.
Bare minimum of extra, you might say.
You mean things that people start day one of their podcast with?
Well, those people are overachievers.
Damn right. Okay. But we have conferred with each other during the pod baby reset. And have decided that we should really be trying to put out some regular bonus content for you, for all of you Patreon subscribers. So that is currently in the works, and keep an ear out for that coming very soon.
This is something that is completely made possible by our Patreon supporters, and especially our editor, Aram.
Who is paid for completely by you.
Right, exactly. Without whom we could not make this work anymore. So
do that is anything extra in any way.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So where are we in the Gates of Morning campaign?
So the Gates of Morning campaign is our 5th edition D&D game set in Eberron, a sequel of sorts to the original Morning Glory campaign. And in Flamekeep, the seat of the Church of the Silver Flame, the party is hunting down a rogue sect of House Jurasco.
So I think there was just an explosion.
Yep. An attack on the Keeper of the Flame has summoned a 7-foot vulture-headed demon, Avrok. So the Kalistar Vesicod places one hand each on Lenore and Switch and psychically accelerates their physical forms before he quickly retreats to the backline.
Then Vrock lets loose a terrible shriek, and Lenore and Bramble are frozen in place by the terrible sound.
Which is a horrible waste of that haste. Switch attempts to rebuke the demon with holy vigor, but the Vrock stands its ground, so instead she charges and stabs it, channeling divine strength through her eerily silent blade. Badly wounded, it throws its head back and howls, summoning two more Vrocks.
They could do that? That feels like cheating.
Oh, it is, absolutely. Demons cheat all the time.
So one of them slashes futilely at Lenore, while the other attacks the Keeper's carriage. But a large, flightless, six-limbed dragon creature emerges, wrapping its scaly body around the girl to protect her. Then it belches a cone of fire at the demon and setting a nearby house ablaze.
You know, lawful good. Warden calls lightning from a cloudless sky, and then Vesicod fries the minds of two of the demons with mental static. Switch is still moving with blinding speed, so she hacks the first Vrock apart and then confronts the next one.
Lenore and Bramble awaken from their stupor, and the rogue, Lenore, puts an arrow down the throat of an injured demon, banishing it back to Shavaroth.
And sensing that they have the upper hand, the party converges on the last demon, taking blows from its sharp claws in order to close ranks, and putting it down before it can summon even more allies. As the din of battle fades, they look up, and notice they are surrounded by soldiers, all with Nox arrows. But a single word from the Keeper calms the situation, and then paladins quickly scramble to tend to the injured. And the dragon creature slumps back to the floor of the carriage and resumes its nap.
So, Jayla Darren, the Keeper of the Flame, is saddened by the loss of life, but turns to the party and thanks them. She says, "I hope we shall see each other again," before continuing on her slow path through the crowd.
Just another day in the life of the Keeper of the Flame. What, an assassination attempt? Yeah.
Just roll the dice. Oh, demons this time.
Cool. All right. You're sending CR7 demons? Thought you could do better. As the throng finally thins, a man in simple flamic robes approaches the party. "You are invited to attend an audience with the Flame this evening." He's smiling when he says this, but it is very clear that this is an order and not really an invitation. He then leaves quickly, and Zoder, their host, impressed by the party's battle prowess, finally escorts them to the Orion Enclave.
That evening, the same cleric arrives at the Enclave to take the party to the Cathedral of the Silver Flame, a massive stone structure resplendent with the wealth and grandeur of Thrain. Eventually, they are brought up to a large sitting room deep within the church. And Jayla and four others are in deep discussion when the party arrives. The keeper is seated, barefoot, on a cushioned chair. No guards are in sight, but the ever-present dragonhound naps at her feet.
And we'll find out what happens next week. So this week, I've climbed to a high point, and I espy a conversation about reconnaissance.
Yeah, been thinking about this topic a lot because our home group has decided that our regiment in Legion of Lasguns, my 40k reskin rebuild of Band of Blades, that our regiment is a recon regiment. So I'm going to have to figure out a way to make recon as exciting as pitched battles and desperately holding the line and dying face down in the mud to a horde of orcs. So how do I do that?
See, I was not at the play session when it was decided that we were going to be a recon unit. And when I found out, I was like, really? Because the stereotype of reconnaissance is a lot like the stereotype of playing a cleric way back in the day, which is like, hey, it's boring. Nothing really happens. And if you're doing your job right, then nothing dramatic does happen.
This is technically true, but also, like, I think realistically there's a lot of good inspiration for what recon units do that isn't just boring, you know, go stand in a place for 10 hours and do a stakeout. One thing that comes to mind is especially, I mean, because we're talking about like Warhammer 40k, right? And you're Imperial Guard, so you have access to technology. Like, if you watch like Generation Kill, right? That's about the first recon Marines in Iraq. They are armored cavalry, right? They are in Humvees the entire deployment. So they're in vehicles, which is already more exciting than just sneaking in and never being seen anywhere, right? Because you get to ride into battle against tanks, if you're unlucky, in lightly armored Humvees.
Yeah, I think recon, can we just call it recon, gets a bad rap. From people who I think have ended up playing bad sessions, or, you know, I think we often think cinematically. And if you look at the scenes in movies where recon is happening, they're often still. And I don't think that is necessarily a bad thing. You can obviously, and we will talk about ways in order to make those, you know, more active, to make sure that there's some dice rolling, to make sure that there's some dramatic tension. But there can also be really useful times for slower moments where you have character development. Right? If you think about the typical stakeout, you're there with a coffee and a donut and people are, you're looking at each other. Like the buddy comedy is like, wait, you're eating that? Why are you doing that? Wait, that smells bad. And we're here for 6 hours. And wait, you're shaving in here? What's happening? And we, like, you develop a sense of who these characters are because you get to spend a lot of time with them in the narrative.
So let's start out with, what is recon? I would say that these are adventures and missions and, you know, any activity where the objective is discovering information through observation. And occasionally theft.
Occasionally. I'm stealing that information. You didn't want me to know where enemy troops were. Now I do. I stole it from your brain.
Right. Okay. Or you know, your tent. But yeah, sure, your brain.
Your physical location. This is often a setup for another adventure, right? You are scoping out a heist target. You are scouting ahead for threats so that the party doesn't need to face them unawares. You're gathering information undercover. Or, you know, like we mentioned before, the old-fashioned police stakeout.
But not necessarily, right? The recon could be the heist, it could be the infiltration, it could be the break-in itself. Again, right? This is about information, not about jewels. It is about, you know, a loaded data drive, not about necessarily, like, you know, the rare artwork on the walls.
I mean, it could also be and or. I mean, while we're here.
Sure, sure. But, like, the reason you're doing this is to learn what's on the drive, right? It's to learn what's in the file. It's not, you know, a little for me, a little for you, but, like, the goal is not to just take valuables. The goal is to actually learn something that's going to impact your story going forward.
Mm-hmm. And I always love this as a red herring. You'll see this sometimes where it seems like it's a heist. It seems like you know what the goal is, and maybe you foiled what you believe was a heist, and it turns out you did not foil a recon mission.
I think you can also consider, like, rescue missions or kidnappings or even, like, a prison break to be a recon mission, right? If the goal is to get a person out, right, like, exfiltrate somebody from a situation as they hope or against their will, because they have something you need, right? Information or a skill or something like that. I mean, I think that qualifies as recon as well.
Yeah, this is an opportunity to sort of expand your definitions. If you think recon is boring, then you probably are thinking solely of stealth missions and hiding in the mud and, you know, moving carefully and slowly and scaling walls.
Right. I would argue that unless you're assassinating someone, a dinner party is probably a very fanciful recon mission.
Why else are you there, right? You're probably there undercover to find out information about people that you will use elsewhere in this campaign.
Exactly. You're there to set the stage for whatever's coming after the party.
Expand the definition. There are a lot of ways that you can go with recon, and probably my favorite recon missions are when they go sideways.
So, yeah, let's talk about why is it worth doing recon mission? Why introduce this as an adventure archetype in your game? You already mentioned one piece of it, which is just sort of the opportunity for character development, right? You can have those small moments if you frame them as, you know, you've gotten to the place, you're observing, what do you talk about? I think that's great. Also, you can use it to advance the overarching narrative, right? So this is where you learn, what is the big bad doing? What unknown threats are lurking out there? Like, what is it that you should be aware of that you're not currently? Like, recon is how you figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Recon is a great way to do exposition in a campaign without having to go through exposition.
Yeah, it's like active things, exposition.
Right. Like, suddenly you realize the big picture or what's happening, or, like, the big reveal happens, and the characters, the players feel like they have discovered that for themselves rather than having some sort of librarian sit them down and explain it to them.
Right. You can also use it to sow new plot seeds, to introduce new plot threads, to reintroduce old ones that everyone forgot about, you know, to tie everything together into a bow, right? If the party hasn't figured out what, you know, activity A plus activity B, how they're related, well, recon can reveal that. You know, if you're trying to figure out what is it that the CIA and this gang have in common and you stake out the meeting, well, then you're going to learn what it is that they're working on together, right? What nefarious thing is the CIA trying to, I don't know, distribute in
the inner cities? Yes.
Yeah, right. I guess. Yeah, you're right. No, that tracks. Yeah,
that's okay. That's happening. Yeah.
What horrible thing are they doing to heroin? I got it.
The really nice thing about being in a reconnaissance situation is that you have players actively asking for more information that they don't know about. And as a GM, that's your chance to be like, great, I can put in anything.
Yeah, exactly.
you literally do not know what it is. I can make stuff up to change the pacing of the campaign or the direction of the campaign to mix things up. I can make sure that I'm delving into backstories to tie hooks in. I can make sure that I am about to give you the thing that you have been searching for, you know, the last 6 months of game time.
Right.
Because this is a chance to, like, expand the details of activities that might otherwise just be maybe a dice roll. We talked about this a bit with, you know, going to the library and research. All of those activities can be handled very quickly with, you know, you pick up percentile dice, roll it, and find out what happens. But if you want to stretch that out, or if you want to you know, go through the motion of like finding out how all of it unfolds, you can turn it into a little adventure. And this is an opportunity for the players to feel like they actually earned the information. They earned the success rather than just rolling well.
Right. Yeah. And it lands a little bit differently when you spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours of a game session doing the reconnaissance yourself and role playing that versus, you know, 5.5 minutes of a dice roll and some exposition from the GM that we didn't really participate in. And I already forgot all the details that I learned, and I'm just going to have to ask you about them later.
How long are your dice rolls? Are they taking 5.5 minutes?
Oh, well, how long is my exposition?
Okay. I just thought you had a really, really big dice tower.
It's a really clunk, dice roller. Yeah.
Clunk, 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 clunk. Hold on. Wait, give it a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Give it a second.
13 flights of stairs.
Oh, it's cocked.
You can also use recon to give spotlight time to scouts. You know, if you have a character who's specialized in scouting, right? Not necessarily stealth, but, you know, in kind of observation and things like that. Survival. This is a way to show off the points that they committed to that, right? They said it was important to them, and now there's a mission that they get to lead. There's an adventure that is like set up for them. It's not just, hey, what's around that corner? Hope it doesn't ambush you.
Yeah, this is a good chance for like the detective characters to shine as well. And then it is an opportunity for world building and scene setting. Because when the PCs are seeking something specific out in the game world, the players can learn more about the world in general. They're traipsing about and uncovering things, looking for the thing that they're looking for, but they're also going to find a bunch of stuff that they weren't looking for because it's obviously not going to be in the first place that they look.
Right, exactly. And that might not be novel to the PCs, but it could be novel to the players, mm-hmm. right? The characters expect this, the players might not. And so you can use those kind of recon missions to sort of prepare the players for what's out there, yeah. right? If there's something about the environment that they're going into that is strange, right? The next place they're adventuring is not, you know, like, say, the Feywild. You know, they might want to go and take a look at it and see what's coming, right? And now they're learning stuff about the world as they do it. It's helping them on their adventure, but the players are also getting accustomed to what this is like.
This is an especially good tactic if you have players who are in a setting or game world that they are not familiar with, even if the characters are. And it can also be really good at the beginning of a new arc. Or when you've gone to a new location, right? You just did the sailing on the high seas sessions, and now you've entered port in a new pirate city, and you've got to get the lay of the land. Do recon that makes sense in game for the characters, and also gives your players a chance to acclimate and figure out what's going on, so they can actually pinpoint what their goals are.
Right.
It's tough though, right? There's a challenge to do recon well.
There's a reason that there's no recon adventures, Ishan.
Yeah. it's never the whole bucket.
Yeah, they always, you know, for some reason, Dungeons & Dragons always puts you in a dungeon and not, you know, on a broad plain with a plateau overlooking it.
This is the Scry Core. Oh, no, we don't go anywhere. We just simply hang out here and look at stuff. Right, we tell other people where to go to have adventures.
Exactly. So the rewards can be anticlimactic. You know, a lot of times the reward for learning about a threat means that you just avoid that threat or you prepare for it in a way that trivializes it, right? Like, oh, there's giants over there. Or, you know, like the orcs have allied with the giants. I better go grab my giant's bane weapons, right? And now it's like, okay, well, that was going to be a big threat and now you've made it nothing. Like, that's actually almost worse than having walked into the trap and had a hard fight.
Yeah, on the flip side, you need to make the fact that you did reconnaissance matter, right? There isn't any point in reconnoitering a monster or a location if there aren't any weaknesses that you could discover, or it turns out that there actually wasn't anything dangerous over that hill. You know, like, if the goblins are not massing, what was the point of you doing the reconnaissance? Okay, I guess in game you got that information and you know that you don't need to waste resources there, but like, what a waste of a session.
Yeah, exactly. And now I'm taking none of that knowledge into the thing that my character actually goes and does next week, you know, and that's the problem. It's not that it isn't true to world, that sometimes the value was learning there's nothing there. It's that, does that inform you in some way that makes your next session better? Maybe not. I think it's also a challenge to figure out what is the fail state for reconnaissance, right? If you're unsuccessful, now what? Like, I spent 3 hours on this mission. I spent, you know, we spent half the session going to look at the thing that we're going to go do, and we failed. Well, what happens now?
Right. I mean, this is a prime example of needing to fail forward in order to make the session itself rewarding, like to make it valuable to play. So, you know, if players don't learn critical information for their next adventure, what are they going to do about it? Does that mean that they abandon the mission? Does that mean that they are now going to take on this next mission or this next session with some sort of disadvantage, or, you know, proverbially fighting with one arm tied behind their backs?
Well, if they're players, then they will not proceed with a disadvantage. They will fight, finagle, and do whatever they can to avoid moving forward.
Yeah, even if it means derailing the adventure. Like, right. Why would we go there? No.
Yeah, like, I'm not, this is the moment of premise rejection. It's like, I needed to recon something. I wasn't able to. That's clearly a big threat, and I'm not engaging with it. Goodbye.
And, you know, you can run into this as well, even if you're in the success state for reconnaissance, right? Oh, we found the thing and I don't know how to deal with it. We don't have giant spain weapons. We're not equipped to fight giants. They're not one of my favorite enemies because, like, that's a terrible mechanic. Let's not go in that direction. I refuse.
Right.
Let the giants have this town.
So, and then you run into this thing where, okay, so if they're missing critical information, they were supposed to get it through this adventure. They failed to get that information. You have to find a way to get it to them, right? Or you are accepting that they are just not going to proceed, and then you have to pivot. But if you want them to continue on this adventure, you've got to find them a way to get that. Like, now that you've failed reconnaissance, if you are gifted that information in some other way, is that equally rewarding? Does that undermine the effort they put into the reconnaissance? Are the players now going to feel like, well, why did I bother doing that? Like, that was just kind of a waste of our time if you're just going to tell us what we needed to know, even though we've messed it up.
Mm-hmm. So in any of these scenarios where it hasn't really panned out the way the players want, people are going to start thinking, why wasn't this just a dice roll? You know, why aren't we bemoaning the fact that I rolled poorly rather than, we made some mistakes and we wasted hours?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then you've got to think, like, what's interesting or special about this attempt at recon that we needed to play it out at the table? Like, why did we invest 2 hours in this? Like, what was the purpose? Because,
yeah, why did we, Shane? Huh? Why did we?
Hey, look, I don't, look, random mission generation, all right? I don't pick the primary. That's on you, bud.
And of course, a traditional recon mission is often based on stealth. So there's limited opportunity for other people to shine if you're not good at that, because, like, you don't take the loud clanky knight on your stealth mission. Duh.
Right.
Of course, now you split the party.
That's the other thing. Yeah. What if we should split the party? Like, okay, well, what are the rest of you doing? I hope there's some recon in town you can do. You're not just carousing at the tavern and getting yourselves in trouble, because now we reconned our way out into a jailbreak.
Let's hope that the fail state of my recon mission isn't death, because you don't know.
A funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
Panacea.
So keep in mind as well that you have some systems that just have skills that are designed to hand wave this, right? Gather information in D&D is one of those things. Like, Blades in the Dark and other, you know, Forge in the Dark games have flashbacks so that you can specifically reduce planning steps like recon. So if you're doing this, if you're introducing this, you're always having to weigh, you know, the value of the spotlight time against the value of those mechanics.
Yeah, and we've talked before in previous episodes about stripping those mechanics and porting them into games that don't have them. So always consider that.
We'll talk about that.
Well, so that brings us to, you know, we've just gone through a long litany of problems with reconnaissance. So how do you go about fixing those in order to make these a rewarding game session?
So I think the first thing you've got to do is decide what is there to find, right? What isn't what it seems? What hidden information can be revealed? What's missing that should be there, right? Like, ask yourself those questions and solidify around what it is the players are there to find. Or at least in what form does that information take, right? So if they need to go get, you know, a dossier, then, you know, you don't necessarily need to know what's in the dossier, but you do need to know where it is and why it's there. And then, you know, you can figure it out from there.
These are very powered by the apocalypse type questions.
Interestingly. Yes. Interestingly, that we're playing a Power on the Apocalypse type game that inspired this question. I think the next step then is to figure out what the challenges are, right? So what is preventing the players from just getting the information they need? Are there guards or sentries? Do you have electronic anti-surveillance? Are there suspicious locals?
Is it magic that's going to get in their way? Because that is going to trip up a traditional rogue. And it's important to remember here, right, don't get caught in the recon-only trap. Combat is not off-limits, especially if it ends up being unrelated to the reconnaissance, or if, you know, the choices that the characters make in what is supposed to be a quiet, stealthy job make sense that it would result in action.
Yeah, there's always third-party factors that could be an issue here too, right? Like, you know, if you're casing a joint for a heist, in an enemy gang's territory, like, they're not going to take kindly to it, right? So they might send some goons to come rough you up for being in their turf. Fighting them doesn't tip off the heist target. You still got to do it, or else you're going to, you know, walk away with a broken nose and possibly worse, right? So you got to figure out, like, okay, how are we going to handle this fight? And that's fine. You can have a combat-focused game. You can fight during recon. It doesn't mean you're not stealthy. It doesn't mean you're not sneaky. It doesn't mean you can't accomplish all of your goals.
So ask the players for their approach. How are they going to recon their target? Start spitballing ideas. And that's an approach that works for any kind of game system. You don't necessarily have to start off knowing within the mechanics exactly the optimal way for the party to go about their recon. So start talking with them about how they think about doing it in the fiction, and then the mechanical ways tend to bubble up.
This is where you might have to do a little thinking on your feet if you're planning an adventure and they are more creative than you, right? So if they're going to try and hack the information, right, well, then, you know, the information probably can't be sitting on a server, or else they're not going to be physically present in the building that you want them to be for your adventure. You know, if it's information, you know, if they have scrying magic, right? Well, they can see where the information they're looking for is, perhaps, but they can't get the detail of it without actually physically being present.
And then once there's an objective, just skip to the action. What was it? 2 weeks ago we talked about.
Yeah.
just skip the boring stuff.
Right. This is by far the most Forge in the Dark thing. It's just like, cool. We're not going to make a dozen stealth and survival checks to see how you did on your way. We're just going to tell you where you got to and then make it fun.
No, every 1d4 hours, you need to roll percentile dice.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that. This is an adventure. Like, this isn't interstitial time in which we're trying to figure out if something interesting happens. Like, you were on your way to something interesting. Nothing more interesting is going to happen than the adventure, which is the recon.
Right. So even if you are currently playing a game where normally you are playing out every square in a dungeon and you're, you know, going 5 feet by 5 feet, tapping everything with your 10-foot pole, this part is not the dungeon crawl. Don't worry about it. The goal here is not finding loot and finding monsters to fight and defeating those monsters. The goal is doing the cool sneaky thing.
Right. Learning the thing you needed to learn. If you are worried that doing recon is boring, you have our permission to just skip the boring stuff. Like, if sitting at your watch post for 12 hours is not something that your group is going to find a way to make interesting, right? They don't want to role play what that time is like. They don't want to discuss maybe, like, you know, what is the funny thing that happened while you were stuck in that lookout van? You know, you could just say, cool, like 12 hours pass uneventfully. Like, and now the person you're looking for walks up to the door that you're watching. And here we are.
Yeah. The nice thing about this is, you know, if you're wondering, oh, when does the exciting stuff start? It starts whenever you pick up the narrative. Literally, at any point that you decide you're going to pick up the narrative, that's when the interesting stuff starts. And everything that happened before that, by definition, was not interesting.
Exactly.
And, you know, you sort of alluded to this, like, it depends on your table composition. You know, what is it that people are going to be interested in? And what is it that people are invested in exploring? You know, if you are about to do the prison break and you want to see the one person with that rubber ball bouncing it against the wall that bothers another cellmate and then they have an argument. Like, if that is a fun interaction for the table, do that interaction. That's the action. If it's not, then I don't know. You can reminisce it, I guess. Reminisce about it, I guess, once you're all free.
Right. You could ask the question, what were you doing when the wall caved in? So again, this is something Band of Blades and Blades in the, I mean, all the Fours in the Dark games, right? They do really well with the engagement roll, which is a single dice roll that just informs your starting situation and your position in it when we cut to the action. So if you have good rolls, you're in control, you might already be past the first obstacle, you know, you have a solid grasp on what's about to happen, and you're going to go seize the bull by the horns. If you have a bad roll, you're in trouble, something isn't going to plan, you're out of control, something you didn't account for has occurred, and now you're dealing with this on your back foot, right? And you can be somewhere in the middle, and that's your starting situation. We got to roll dice, and now we're in our adventure.
Yeah, it's very all guardsmen party, so no shit, there we were.
Yeah, exactly.
Where? Oh, you know, exactly where you need to be at this particular moment. How did you get there? Well, let's talk about that.
Exactly. So I think, you know, I think we've suggested this before, but I think, you know, for recon, like if you're playing D&D, which, but any game that just has a set of skills, right, but doesn't have engagement rules, like make a group check. Right. Just let everybody roll whatever the relevant skill is. Is it stealth because you're sneaking in? Is it survival because you're going through difficult terrain to get there? Is it gather information because you're taking kind of a social landscape of an area? Fine. Right. And then just decide what's like controlled, what's risky, what's desperate. So I would say, like, if half the group succeeds, you're in control. You got your arms around what's going on. You have agency in how you address the first obstacle.
100 yards up ahead, you spot an orc patrol. They don't see you yet. You can get the jump on them if you want, or give them the slip. Which is it?
If no one succeeds, well, then you're in trouble. You're desperate. You're surprised by the first obstacle, or you're poorly equipped to deal with it, or it isn't what you expected. I pulled this one on you guys in your last mission in Legion of Lasguns, actually. You needed to scale a cliff face to get you were trying to get to a shrine, but could have been a vantage point halfway up. Your climbing kit broke, and suddenly one of the squad members was just dangling by a thread 100 feet in the air. What do you do, squad?
I love the meta conversation that happens at the table once this mechanic starts to be really well understood, right? So, okay, we know we need to scale a cliff to get to a location, and that's where the target is. The question is, if our engagement roll sucks, then we need to be good at climbing. If our engagement roll is good, we don't. So do you hedge your bet when you're like planning your loadout or, you know, preparing your spells or whatever? Is it worth the feather fall? Do I need to spend that slot?
That is the optimizer in us.
But if you think about it, even in the fiction, right? It's like, hey, are you the kind of person who plans for everything to go right or everything to go wrong?
Right.
Someone succeeds or more than one person succeeds, but it's less than half of the group, then you're probably at the first obstacle that you're going to face and you've got a chance to avoid it, but just a chance.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, your stakeout van looks suspicious. A neighbor called the cops who have just arrived on the scene. What are you going to do? Right. You're not made. You're not compromised. You're just in a bad situation. How are you going to deal with the situation?
Another way that you can deal with what can be sort of tedious, constant rolling of stealth is what we did on the final level of the Sunless Citadel in our recent actual play, which is like, I just had you give me a stealth check, give me an investigation check, give me a perception check, right? And we're just going to use those for like a while. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we're just going to skip the stuff that's boring. I'm going to, you know, we're using a published adventure. So it's like, I'm just going to read the interesting stuff that you find. And when we come to an obstacle, well, let's see how good you did on that thing. And then we'll, you know, figure out if this is going to be something worth narrating or talking about.
Yeah, that was great because it would have been extremely, one, difficult and two, boring to narrate me trying to walk through, you know, shoulder height grass trying to avoid twig blights
And or like, even if we had a grid that we were trying to like carefully play Frogger through, like it wouldn't have been entertaining. And also like it would have just been frustrating because eventually you're going to roll poorly and then the whole jig is up anyway.
Yeah. Do these shortcuts with any kind of reconnaissance? Because the sort of definitionally, reconnaissance involves large areas, you know, large swaths that you're sort of searching through, whether that is an entire library, you don't know which book it's in, or you're literally at 30,000 feet and scanning the horizon back and forth. There is the neutral state for almost anything that you look at is going to be, doesn't matter, it's boring.
So then another thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, I think by default, people think of recon, they think of stealth, right? Stealth is good if you have it. But sometimes speed can be better, right? It's not about not getting noticed. It's about getting there, getting what you need, and getting out before anybody can actually respond to what you've done. So there's a reason it's called a smash and grab, right? Like, it isn't a cat burglar. It's a brick through a window, and you're in and out before anybody has a chance to really notice what's gone.
It's an owlbear burglar. We went in the front door, yeah. We took the front door.
We stole the front door.
Sometimes this can also be literal speed. This was Cam's idea in the Morning Glory campaign when you needed to make your way through the Pit of Five Sorrows. Part of that was reconnaissance. Part of that was a reverse heist.
Yeah.
Right. But instead of going room by room sneakily, which I thought you would do by avoiding the guardians since you had intel on all of their stats, you just ran. You ran really, really fast, and you ran past them. And then they all just started chasing you, so you had all of the guardians directly behind you, and you just needed to stay faster than them because there was no turning back.
And Yakety Sax played the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But hey, you got the info you needed.
Yeah, exactly. We got that prophecy. The other thing to keep in mind with speed is that, like, you know, stealth might be necessary, but sometimes getting there quickly can provide an advantage, right? So if you aren't great at sneaking, maybe if you're in place early, you know, you can be more effective because you have a better chance to prepare for it, right? So, you know, we've done that where it's like, if you need to set an ambush, right, like, it's better to get there the day before than it is to get there 10 minutes before. So if you can figure that out, if you can solve for that problem, you know, maybe the stealth is hand waved because you've solved it in a different way.
I will say that, you know, reconnaissance is one of the classic scenarios, you know, combat, social situations, dinner party, what have you. And I like to always have one of those, or at least an inkling of an idea of what one of those might be, in my back pocket at all times when I'm running, just because you never know when your players are going to take you in a different direction as soon as you did the recap from last week. But you also never know, sometimes, like, this is real life. Often you don't know who's going to be at the session until the day of. So if you end up with, you know, two players or three players and you're thinking about scratching, well, if it's, you know, the rogue and the scout, why not just do a recon mission? You don't even need to split the party. I mean, in the fiction, split the party. Everyone stays back at HQ. That's fine. But, like, let's do a side quest.
It's your buddy cop comedy, right? Like,
I mean, yeah, this can actually be even more fun if it is the rogue and the paladin.
Right.
I was gonna do a little, like, beanie reconnaissance, but, like, you're here, huh? I mean, I could use some muscle, I guess.
It's, yeah, like, I'll go talk to the shopkeeper. Okay, you talk to the shopkeeper.
Right, yeah.
I sneak into the storeroom and see what he has back there for ritual components.
Oh, we got to reconnoiter the gang hideout? Great. I want you to go out front and challenge them. Wait, what? No, trust me. It'll be fine. But there's like 15 guys in there. Yeah, you'll be fine. This will be fun, at least for me.
The other thing that I really like having recon missions for is when players get really planny and you can't shake them out of, I want a plan, right? Mm-hmm. I know what the next thing is. I know it's going to be hard. We got to have the perfect plan. And then they start asking a lot of questions, right? And it's like, okay, I mean, we can sit here and, like, talk through the hypotheticals for 3 hours, or, like, oh, we'll get the answer to that question, like, real quick, recon adventure, like, you know, we're going to roll, we're going to play this out for the next hour. Mm-hmm. Right. And then we actually got something done this session and you still got to do all the planning, but you earned the information you had. And like, now it felt like more of a session and less of just like bogged down table talk.
Yeah. I mean, it's also a good stalling technique. If like you don't know what the answers to all of their questions are, you can be like, well, let's roll it out and let's find out.
Yup. The number one rule is, what is there to find? Break that all the time. Start the mission and just see what they suggest they might be finding. That's good. We'll take that.
Hmm. That's interesting. Tell me more about that. D&D is therapy.
Right. I think as we kind of wrap this up, right? Like, I'm for one, really excited that you've chosen to be a recon regiment. Right. Like, I think there's a lot of interesting kind of like mission profiles to bring into that. And I'm excited that like there are success and failure conditions that just don't involve fighting. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's kind of the thing that I'm most excited about. You're a military unit. You're going to fight. Like, that'll happen. Right. But then like the recon stands out as like, oh, this is the time we didn't. You know, it's like that palate cleanser of like, cool, we've been bogged down in like, you know, AC and damage and like all of this stuff. And then it's like, but then there was that mission where like we didn't have to do any of that, you know? We just got to like solve problems and figure it out.
Yeah, and sometimes if solving the problem is rising slowly out of the muck with a knife in your teeth before snapping some necks, then great.
Best of both worlds, butt kickers are happy.
Right? Have fun with it. But yeah, I think reconnaissance is ultimately really underrated. And for like a lore hound like me, who also, you know, really likes combat mechanics, it's a great marriage of the two.
Oh, great. No pressure.
Make it good. This is all I care about.
All right. Do you hear that, Ishan?
I do not at all, because we succeeded.
Well, then it's time to move on to the Character Creation Forge and learn a little bit more about you. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus me.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
And join the conversation on Discord. There's a link in the show notes.
All right, so this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building Radar. Shane, what or who is Radar?
Radar is our recon specialist who can see what there is to be seen, can get where they need to get, and can figure out what needs to be figured out without getting into too much trouble.
Okay, so you decided not to go the MASH route.
I did not go the MASH route because I didn't do the homework.
Okay. All right. So what's the build?
But that is my character concept is going to be, you know, like part of a medical unit in a war in Korea. It's like, you know, they get up to antics.
I dig it.
Have it ever seen. Okay. The build. Gloomstalker Ranger 6. Divination Wizard 14.
I don't know that we've seen a Ranger Wizard spread yet in the Forge, but I like it.
You think of like the classic, like the CIA archetypes, right? Like you have like the analyst and the cowboy, like the field agent and then like the office analyst. Mm-hmm. I feel like this blends the two, right? You've got your Gloomstalker, you've got your ranger to be like kind of out in the field. You've got your divination wizard to be back in the office and make sense of everything going on. So we're going to start the build with 5 levels of ranger. At level 1, you get favorite enemy, so you can have advantage to track your enemy or recall info about them. You also gain their language for free, so always good. And then you'll get natural explorer, so you can move easily through your favored terrain.
You'll pick up a fighting style. For a Gloomstalker, blind fighting is always great. You'll get 10 feet of blind sight.
Literally radar. It's literally radar.
Is yours going to be echolocation? Are you squeaking the whole time?
I'm squeaking the entire time.
Yeah, obviously. Ranger spellcasting up to 2nd level spells. People sleep on ranger spellcasting, but there are some very good low level ranger spells. Lots of utility.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the Gloomstalker gets like rope trick. So it's great.
Three, you get Dread Ambusher, which gives you wisdom to initiative, and you get an additional attack on the first turn of combat, which will deal an extra d8 damage.
You also get Umbral Sight, so you'll gain dark vision up to 60 feet, or you'll gain 30 extra feet of dark vision. And then another really slept-on ability, you are invisible in darkness to creatures with dark vision. Like, you, this is like the freest invisibility in the entire game.
It's almost always dark everywhere you go. Dungeons are dark.
I know. And dark vision is very common. They're never going to see it coming.
You get primeval awareness. After a minute, you can identify if creatures, if certain types of creatures are within a mile of you or six in your favorite terrain. And then you get extra attack before hopping over to wizard.
Yeah, so we'll take all of the wizard levels here. You'll end up with 7th level spells known and 8th level slots because you're multi-class. But at level 2, Divination Wizard, of course, gets Portent. That lets you roll d20s after a long rest, and you can use those values to replace an attack saving throw or ability check. I like to flavor these not as like, oh, you know, the divine insight into what's going to happen, like turn the tide. I like to flavor this as like very, very competent at your job. So if it's a really good roll that you're going to use, it's like, I mean, of course I got an 18 on this, you know, stealth check. I'm incredibly stealthy. Or likewise, if you roll low, well, of course they fail their perception check. I'm incredibly stealthy.
Expert divination lets you regain a spell slot of a lower level when you're casting a divination spell, which really gives you staying power throughout the day.
Yeah, it lets you use your divination spells and then still have something to do in combat. Like, that's always the problem when you have these utility kind of focused spell trees, is just like, cool, how do I fight? You don't have to worry about that. You end up refunding some of your spell slots as you do it. And then what we're really here for, 10th level, is Third Eye. As an action, once per short rest, you have a choice of gaining dark vision, ethereal sight into the ethereal plane, the ability to read any language, or to see invisibility, and it lasts until you take another rest. So
always.
Yeah, that's a pretty handy recon ability, don't you think? It costs an action to turn it on.
And then at 14, you'll get Greater Portent, which gives you a third portent roll.
And then our wild card level here is Ranger 6. So what you're going to get at Ranger 6 is an additional favorite terrain and an additional favorite enemy, which includes the language. I feel like this is a good time to take in like the second act of your adventure. You know, whenever you're at that point, or not act, second arc, right? Whenever you're at that point where you're going to a new terrain or facing a new type of enemy, you know, like you dealt with the goblins and now you're dealing with, you know, aberrations, right? Cool. I'm like, my focus is recon, right? Like, I'm going to study up on the terrain. I'm going to study up on the inhabitants. I am preparing myself to travel there, to deal with them, to fight with them. Like, I will be the expert on the next thing we're going to.
This is...
Take that at whatever point you need it.
This is something that I've always liked about higher level favorite enemies. I mean, I don't love favorite enemy as a mechanic in general, but, you know, it makes perfect sense to me that the angry ranger, you know, who's been just dealing with goblins this whole time because, you know, she's great at slaughtering goblins since essentially the womb, meets a new kind of enemy. And maybe it's undead, or maybe there are hordes of aberrations and mind flayers trying to destroy the world right now, but I've just decided, you know who I also hate? Aberrations. They've really been getting on my nerves a lot. I think I'm just going to get really, like, much better at killing them.
What's the Full Metal Jacket line? It's like, oh, I want to join the army to see the world and meet interesting people and kill them.
All right, so, Shane, you already tipped your hand, but who is your radar?
My radar is attached to a medical unit. I think my radar is a scout specialist, right? He is a gentleman with a very particular set of skills. You know, his background isn't important. Where he came from, why he hates goblins so much, none of that's important. You don't need to know that. What you need to know is that he's very good with a blade. You'll never get the jump on him. And he always knows what threat's coming around the corner, even if it doesn't seem like he should. And that's a pretty handy person to have around to watch your back or watch your front. So, you know, he's kind of just the, like, coming out, or like just coming in from the rain, like pulling the cloak off his head, not saying a whole lot, but, you know, dangerous, but you don't really want to know too much.
I do want to know too much. Is your radar field before desk or desk before field? Like, what's their career path?
I think it is desk before, I think it is field before desk, right? Like, I think he, yeah, I think this radar is a doer, right? A fighter, a mixer-upper. You know, all the divination skill set is really about being better prepared to fight. So I can guess now something that might be different about your radar, Kishin.
Well, the reason that I asked is so that I could figure out that my radar is, yes, in fact, a desk jockey who has been, through no fault of her own, shoved out into the real world to do field work, to do wet work. And oh my goodness, that's why it's called wet work. Yeah, that makes sense. It's gross. Okay. They don't teach you this they technically do teach you this in the academy, but you know, it's not nearly this icky. You know, I prefer microfiche. But I guess that's why I was put out here, because now I'm supposed to stick the microfiche from like a dead drop, and it's literally a dead drop. There was a body. and you know, I've seen pictures before, but oh, and I got in a fight, but I won, and I don't even know how that happened, but I think, you know, I've just been doing a lot of reading up on pressure points, and joint locks, and I don't know, things just sort of come to me. I remember stuff that I was, browsing, on the internet.
Naturally good muscle memory.
Yeah, I don't know how. It must be those 6 ranger levels. Also, I'm a misanthropist, so I took humans as my favorite enemy.
I think this build also works fine if you take your 2 levels of divination wizard first and then go into ranger. So I could totally see that working for like more of the desk jockey that's kind of thrust into a life of adventure, and it's like, oh, I better study up. Like, I'm not gonna live long out here if I'm just like walking around in robes asking to get be the geeked mage, you know?
Right. Oh, I really should have seen this coming. No, literally, I have a third eye and I'm a divination wizard. I should have seen this coming.
It's my literal job.
Yeah. The way I fight is I put my hands in front of my face and I say, please, not in the face. And then it turns out that's true.
This is you're a kobold. You have the grovel ability. All right. Before we wrap up, let's take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out all of our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
And what do we have planned for next week's episode?
It is our panel from this year's Gen Con Online, all about playing non-human characters.
Well, that's it for episode 287 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.